Welcome to the Talking People podcast. This segment today is books, and I'm going to read an excerpt from a very important book for gender analysis and improving relationships in the patriarchal world. And this book is called Men Explain Things to Me and is written by Rebecca Solnit. It was published in 2014. And my copy is printed in Canada by haymarketbooks.org, okay? So, I'm posting this audio, this reading, because I have just created an activity for advanced students of English. And you can download the activity and the transcript, of course, here on Talking People, okay? I hope it's useful for your English. And also for understanding what feminism is about. It's about love, not war. Of course, it's about struggle, but that's not war. Men Explain Things to Me. 2008. I still don't know why Sally and I bothered to go to that party in the forest slope above Aspen. The people were all older than us and dull, in a distinguished way. Old enough that we, at 40-ish, passed as the occasion's young ladies. The house was great, if you like Ralph Lauren-style chalets. A rugged luxury cabin at 9,000 feet, complete with elk antlers, lots of kilims, and a wood-burning stove. We were preparing to leave when our host said, "No, stay a little longer so I can talk to you." He was an imposing man who'd made a lot of money. He kept us waiting while the other guests drifted out into the summer night and then sat us down at his authentically grainy wood table and said to me, "So, I hear you've written a couple of books." I replied, "Several, actually." He said, in the way you encourage your friend's 7-year-old to describe flute practice, "And what are they about?" They were actually about quite a few different things, the 6 or 7 out by then. But I began to speak only of the most recent on that summer day in 2003, River of Shadows. Edward Muybridge and the Technological Wild West, my book on the annihilation of time and space and the industrialization of everyday life, or, and the industrialization of everyday life. He cut me off soon after I mentioned Muybridge. "And have you heard about the very important Muybridge book that came out this year?" So caught up was I in my assigned role as an ingenue that I was perfectly willing to entertain the possibility that another book on the same subject had come out simultaneously and I'd somehow missed it. He was already telling me about the very important book with that smug look I know so well in a man holding forth, eyes fixed on the fuzzy far horizon of his own authority. Here, let me just say that my life is well sprinkled with lovely men, with a long succession of editors who have, since I was young, listened to and encouraged and published me, with my infinitely generous younger brother, with splendid friends of whom it could be said, like the Clark in the Canterbury Tales, I still remember from Mr. Pelland's class on Chaucer, "Gladly would he learn and gladly teach." Still, there are these other men too. So, Mr. Very Important was going on smugly about this book I should have known when Sally interrupted him to say, "That's her book?" Or try to interrupt him anyway. But he just continued on his way. She had to say, "That's her book," 3 or 4 times before he finally took it in. And then, as if in a 19th century novel, he went to Shen. That I was indeed the author of the very important book it turned out he hadn't read, just read about it in the New York Times book review a few months earlier, so confused the neat categories into which his world was sorted that he was stunned, speechless, for a moment, before he began holding forth again. Being women, we were politely out of earshot before we started laughing, and we've never really stopped. I like incidents of that sort, when forces that are usually so sneaky and hard to point out slither out of the grass and are as obvious as, say, an anaconda that's eaten a cow or an elephant turd on the carpet. The slippery slope of silencings. Yes, people of both genders pop up at events to hold forth on irrelevant things and conspiracy theories. But the out-and-out confrontational confidence of the totally ignorant is, in my experience, gendered. Men explain things to me and other women whether or not they know what they are talking about. Some men. Every woman knows what I'm talking about. It's the presumption that makes it hard at times for any woman in any field, that keeps women from speaking up and from being heard when they dare, that crushes young women into silence by indicating, the way harassment on the street does, that this is not their world. It trains us in self-doubt and self-limitation, just as it exercises men's unsupported overconfidence. I'm skipping a little paragraph here. Arrogance might have something to do with the war, but, well, this refers to the previous paragraph. This syndrome is a war that nearly every woman faces every day. A war within herself too. A belief in her superfluity. An invitation to silence. One from which a fairly nice career as a writer with a lot of research and facts correctly deployed has not entirely freed me. After all, there was a moment there when I was willing to let Mr. Important and his overweening confidence bowl over my more shaky certainty. Don't forget that I have had a lot more confirmation of my right to think and speak than most women, and I have learned that a certain amount of self-doubt is a good tool for correcting, understanding, listening, and progressing. Though too much is paralyzing, and total self-confidence produces arrogant idiots. There's a happy medium between these poles to which the genders have been pushed. A warm equatorial belt of give and take, where we should all meet. More extreme versions of our situation exist in, for example, those Middle Eastern countries where women's testimony has no legal standing, so that a woman can't testify that she was raped without a male witness to counter the male rapist, which there rarely is. Credibility is a basic survival tool. When I was very young and just beginning to get what feminism was about and why it was necessary, I had a boyfriend whose uncle was a nuclear physicist. One Christmas he was telling me, as though it were a light and amusing subject, how a neighbor's wife in his suburban bomb-making community had come running out of her house naked in the middle of the night, screaming that her husband was trying to kill her. How, I asked, did you know that he wasn't trying to kill her? He explained patiently that they were respectable middle-class people. Therefore, her husband trying to kill her was simply not a credible explanation for her fleeing the house, yelling that her husband was trying to kill her. That she was crazy, on the other hand. Even getting a restraining order, a fairly new legal tool, requires acquiring the credibility to convince the courts that some guy is a menace, and then getting the cops to enforce it. Restraining orders often don't work anyway. Violence is one way to silence people, to deny their voice and their credibility, to assert your right to control over the right to exist. About 3 women a day are murdered by spouses or ex-spouses in this country. It's one of the main causes of death for pregnant women in the United States. At the heart of the struggle of feminism to give rape, date rape, marital rape, domestic violence, and workplace sexual harassment legal standing as crimes has been the necessity of making women credible and audible. I tend to believe that women acquired the status of human beings when these kinds of acts started to be taken seriously. When the big things that stop us and kill us were addressed legally from the mid-1970s on. Well after, that is, my birth. And for anyone about to argue that workplace sexual intimidation isn't a life or death issue, remember that Marine Lance Corporal Maria Lauterbach, age 20, was apparently killed by her higher-ranking colleague one winter's night while she was waiting to testify that he raped her. The burnt remains of her pregnant body were found in the fire pit in his backyard. Being told that categorically he knows what he's talking about and she doesn't, however minor a part of any given conversation, perpetuates the ugliness of this world and holds back its light. After my book Wanderlust came out in the year 2000, I found myself better able to resist being bullied out of my own perceptions and interpretations. On 2 occasions around that time, I objected to the behavior of a man, only to be told that the incidents hadn't happened at all as I said, that I was subjective, delusional, overwrought, dishonest, in a nutshell, female. Most of my life, I would have doubted myself and backed down. Having public standing as a writer of history helped me stand my ground. But few women get that boost, and billions of women must be out there on this 7 billion person planet being told that they are not reliable witnesses to their own lives, that the truth is not their property, now or ever. This goes way beyond men explaining things. But it's part of the same archipelago of arrogance. Men explain things to me still, and no man has ever apologized for explaining wrongly things that I know and they don't. Not yet, but according to the actuarial tables, I may have another 40-something years to live, more or less, so it could happen, though I'm not holding my breath. And now I would like to read the dedication in the book, which I think is lovely. For the grandmothers, the levelers, the dreamers, the men who get it, the young women who keep going, the older ones who opened the way, the conversations that don't end, and a world that will let Ella Nachimovic, born January 2014, bloom to her fullest. Well, that's all. Have a nice day.